Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 484 for comics originally released on November 16th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Nightwing number 9. Now, we had reviewed Nightwing with the first issue. They've done a story arc and a fraction, I guess. But this is a kind of a done-in-one issue where Nightwing meets the new Superman. I hate calling him that because he's really the old Superman in this universe. But yeah, again, that's the thing, trying to explain anything in detail with comics and get the particulars. It gets pretty wacky pretty quick. Anyways, the replacement Superman that came in with Rebirth and Nightwing interact in a, like I said, a good done-in-one story. We get the Titans kind of doing a cameo or whatever. And I've been looking forward to this since it started because Nightwing and Superman are two of my favorite characters. And by and large, I felt this really delivered. There were a couple of things here and there that I could nitpick. You know, when in the opening dream sequence, Nightwing is referring to the other Titans as Flash, Arsenal, and Donna. I'm like, well, she doesn't have a code name? We're not going to call her Wonder Girl? We're not even going to call her Troya or whatever? And I think it was just to sidestep the issue of, well, what would we call her? When it's like, yeah, fine, whatever. But then when he wakes up and he's in the Titans loft in Gotham City, I'm like, have we seen this loft before? Honestly, I don't remember. I don't think we have, but maybe I just glossed over that part over in the Titans book. Again, not a big deal, but it's funny for him to be kind of hanging out there in his own book, whereas previously in this title, he seemed to be kind of a bit more of a jet setter with no kind of home base, which of course could explain why he's hanging out with the Titans in their place. But there were a couple of other things that were just sort of tossed in here, including a reference to the Nightwing being an ancient Kryptonian god, eternally born to start anew, kind of the Kryptonian phoenix, if you will. And in the past, they had, even originally, set up Nightwing as something that was a combination of him trying to honor the Batman aspect of his upbringing, and also Superman and the influence Superman had had on him at that point. Which is funny because that's really the character that this Superman knows, not this Nightwing. But we get some fun stuff here. And the basic crux of the story is Nightwing is being tormented by Dr. Destiny in his nightmares. Superman becomes aware of it and decides to help. And, you know, we get that pretty much done in this one issue. And we get a few other things, just Easter eggs tossed in. A quick reference to Superboy Prime, Doomsday, Ultra the Multi-Alien, whatever the big star-eater thing was, and I think it was Final Night. So a couple of Easter eggs. If you get them, great. If you don't, it doesn't really matter. But I really felt Tim Seeley did a great job on the writing here because there was a clear knowledge of the old stories and characters and some really interesting and I felt appropriate comments about how, you know, Nightwing was commenting to Superman that his world's version of these characters or these people was significantly less disturbing than the people he's encountered. And Superman's, yeah, I kind of noticed that too. Common thread. And it was just kind of a comment on how this DC universe is a little bit darker than kind of that classic Bronze Age version. So overall, you know, there are a couple of things, like I said, I could nitpick a little about this, but nothing too serious. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was good stuff.
One of my favorite parts of this story, there was an exchange where Superman is telling Nightwing that there's his counterpart on his Earth, and he's really the closest thing that he's very, so very similar that there's a goodness in that Nightwing that's very almost a one-to-one transfer to this version of the Nightwing, and he feels a kinship to him because of that. And I thought that was really, really a nice touch and really effective. And, you know, there's some good, fun storytelling in here. It does feel like an older style comic book story. And you know, as such, it's not as much, doesn't seem like there's as much on the line, and it's not as consequential as this thing plays out. It didn't feel, you know, it's not part three of a six parter and that'll change DC forever. You know, it wasn't that. It just felt very harkening back to a different type of storytelling, and I appreciated that, and it was fun.
Well, it's funny because right before that, you know, Nightwing being kind of that multiversal constant, there was Superman commenting on how he got the Nightwing bump. And it was, you know, in the previous universe, how Nightwing vouching for somebody meant a lot in the superhero community.
Yeah.
And of course, Superman would never have gotten the benefit of that because, well, he's Superman. You know, the only thing that would have trumped the Nightwing bump would have been the Superman bump kind of a thing. So for him to kind of acknowledge that he was in a position where he had to have somebody vouch for him, and he got Nightwing to do it, and it kind of counted for something. You know, that I thought was a really nice touch and an acknowledgement of really where some of these characters stand in relation to one another, particularly Batman, Nightwing, and Superman. So I think in that respect, this could have some very serious lasting repercussions for the better. But I agree, it is a different style of storytelling in terms of a done-in-one story. You know, they introduce a threat and resolve the threat within the pages of this issue. Even have time for what I felt was a really nice splash page of just the sphere of influence Nightwing has. They were able to bring in kind of some cameos of a couple of characters that I really enjoyed. And we don't get enough of these kind of done-in-one stories. And, you know, again, this isn't going to be the in-depth, drawn-out slugfest and meaty plot or whatever of a trade paperback-length arc. But I felt coming in, doing it, moving on, you need to have stories like these done-in-ones. And by done in one, I don't mean like it's disconnected from what's gone before or what will come after. I think this is actually going to be one of the things they use to potentially reposition Nightwing in Bloodhaven in this universe. But it gives you a satisfying chunk of story with a beginning, middle, and end inside the single issue. And I think we need more of that because it allows you to have some of those longer arcs, but people feel like other things are happening throughout the course of the year. Yeah. So for me, this was an A-. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm hoping when we get a similar issue elsewhere with Wally West from the old universe encountering this Superman, that we get a similarly good story.
Yeah, and the Markio Takara art, it's not the kind of really polished, high quality art that we sometimes get on these, but I think it worked for the story. I just thought some of the backgrounds were, you know, not really defined, but I still thought the art was really effective in telling the story. And from panel, I don't think there was anything bad about the art. It just wasn't some of that house style DC quality that we're used to. It wasn't quite that level, but it still worked well enough for me to enjoy it, and it worked well with the Tim Seeley story. I had it at a B+, and I'm kind of glad that we were able to get this story here, because Nightwing was on the chopping block for me, and you know, just so many double shipping books, not enough time, but this kind of got it a reprieve, strong enough that I want to stick around for a little bit longer, and see what this next thing has to offer, because there were a lot of things that were mentioned here that, you know, could be fun as they play out down the road.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I see what you're saying about the art. It was one where I thought certainly the backgrounds were very much in the background. But some of the faces and some of that stuff I thought was really well done. So I was very pleased with the art by and large.
Mm-hmm.
In a story where getting a better sense of the background would really matter more, I could see where this is not an artist I would necessarily love to have on that sort of an issue. But those sorts of issues I think are few and far between by and large. I'm curious what else this artist has done, because I don't recognize the name.
No, I think he's like at the beginning of his career, I'm guessing, because
I'm not going to guess, because just because I don't recognize the name doesn't mean I haven't read dozens of comics he's done.
I just don't think he's that polished.
I guess that's where I'm differing from you. I think he is polished on the faces and stuff, but was minimalist on the backgrounds intentionally. Enough that they're there, but not enough that they're fully kind of like totally rendered.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't seem like a complete rookie, but I would think he's more at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
not the complete beginning of his work, but more on that side than the been around for decades side.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Captain America Sam Wilson number 15. We've got Nick Spencer on the art, and we've got Angel Zutia maybe on the art, Nick Spencer on the writing and stuff. I probably butchered that artist's name. I apologize. How long have you been reading Captain America? Not this title, but the character in general.
I don't know. Off and on, 20 years, maybe.
Okay. So were you reading the book when D-Man was originally in the book?
No.
Okay. This issue focuses heavily on D-Man, who was Cap's sidekick of sorts in the late 80s. And he was kind of a tragic story. He was kind of a little bit of a misfit and went through a couple of things that just didn't go well. He at one point dies in a plane crash that kind of sort of mirrored Bucky's death. He was out in the Arctic, you know, he's not found. Is he dead? Is he not? Later, Cap thinks he sees him in the ice, that sort of a thing. So, I mean, they'd set it up to where he could come back, but it was one of those where he started out, if you'll pardon the pun, as a D-list character at best, and was kind of the not quite everything that could go wrong with a Cap sidekick, because we've had others do that, but really one of those that was never going to be, he would never get his own title is what it came down to. And that's not a bad thing, not all characters should. But he was a very interesting sidekick or companion for Captain America during the 90s and stuff. The
character, was he gay in the 90s?
Don't think so.
Okay.
He was...
That probably would have stood out in the 90s.
It would have stood out in the 90s. I'm pretty sure he was not. I would have categorized him as a desperate hanger-oner in terms of, it's Cap. I'm hanging with Cap. This is cool. I'm hanging, you know what I mean, versus a go-off be a hero in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to always be that sidekick kind of a thing. Never, like I said, the front runner. He did actually originate in the Thing series back in, I think, 1985 as a wrestler. And it was one that I think Mark Gruenwald was one of the powers that be on the Marvel, on the Captain America side at the time, that brought him back and did some stuff with him. This was before Jack Flag, Free Spirit, and a few of those others that we've seen in this title. But all of them were kind of those, let's have somebody that Cap can be talking to during the adventures sort of characters.
Okay.
But... You know, I was reading the book at the time. I liked the character. Not going to say I loved him. Not going to say I particularly missed him while he was gone. But they've done some fun things with him. This, I think, was a really good issue for him. And there are a couple of pages here that, in my mind, act as kind of a framing sequence where we've got Sam Wilson, Falcon, and Rage going to the wrestling thing where a D-Man is kind of doing a one-time revival of his wrestling career. And... If this was handed to a lesser artist and you changed a couple of lines of dialogue here, this is the sort of thing that could have just as easily been in an 80-page Marvel Christmas special sort of filler sort of a thing, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I do.
I think the writing here was better than we would have gotten there. I certainly think the art was better here than we would have gotten in that sort of a situation. But it had one of those... Take out a few timed references to what's going on with Sam Wilson right now, and this could have been told at almost any point. Worst case, you swap out this Falcon for some other character. And it's funny, because when I first saw the guy, I'm thinking, what's Machine Man doing here? the eyes. But I thought this was a fun done-in-one story. It was a good time, a good opportunity to get D-Man, Demolition Dumphy, you know, show what he was, what he could be, you know, and whatnot. Fun cameo or guest star or whatever for Battlestar. Haven't seen him in a while. Is this a skippable issue? Yeah, sure. But is it a fun done-in-one story? Absolutely. You know, again, it feels like you could easily consider it filler if you wanted to, because, again, the connection to the current events is tangential-ish at best. I mean, they lock it in solidly in the time frame. But I really enjoyed the issue, so it was fun, so I didn't mind that at all.
Yeah, this has an after-school special feel to me, and sometimes that works, and I fully embrace it and enjoy it and love the sweet niceties that it is trying to put forth. And then sometimes I'm bored and I don't care as much. I think just depending on my mood. And I think at the time I was not in a charitable mood, so this was kind of a boring schmaltzy story that I didn't really care for that much. It didn't really connect with me that much, but there was nothing wrong with it. It worked okay. It just very skippable, as you mentioned, and good. Definitely could have been an annual, and worked for what it was. But I didn't feel like it was much.
I can see where you're coming from there. The after school special sort of vibe to it definitely is there. No two ways about it. But what worked for me is, again, I like Battlestar. I like D-Man. So getting those characters on stage for a bit in the spotlight, that was cool to me. I felt the art was really strong here. The facial expressions, the overall line work.
The guy has a good handle on the lighting filters in Photoshop or whatever. Because like everybody has kind of a reflection off of one side of their face or the other, and it really adds the dimensionality to the faces, and there's always a source of light, you know, on everybody's, and not, you know, they don't, you don't see that with all comic book art, so it's that next step above.
This is one of many books I read, or kinds of issues I read, where I wonder if the art is hand drawn or if they're using like Daz Studio or Poser or something for this. Because I look at some of these characters and I think, you know, this, and maybe it's the 3D lighting and the coloring that's doing it. This looks like the sort of thing that could have been, you know, rendered by a computer. And by which I am not trying to diminish the quality and skill of the artist at all, because I think getting this kind of really smooth storytelling out of a computer generated art, that's tricky. But there were just a couple of shots and stuff that made me wonder that. And again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. This is the kind of look I would be very pleased with if I could get out of Daz Studio, Poser, or some other 3D program like Blender or something.
I don't get that sense at all. That there's any kind of automated.
I'm not saying automated. I'm saying they're using a different tool potentially than a pencil. Mm. They've still got to do their own work on it. But like when we've got the flashback sequence. There's an aspect of D-Man there, and maybe it's the thickness of the line defining him from the background or something like that, that makes me question it. And again, I'm not saying it was computer-generated. I'm just saying if somebody showed me, here's how I did it with a computer, I would not be surprised. But I could also see where the artist could do let me do a YouTube video of me actually drawing this stuff. Either way, I would be astonished, because this is just, I think, really solid art, so... I liked it. I thought it was fun, but I can see where you're coming from on you've got to be in the right mood for this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the exact sort of a thing that if I had encountered in something that felt blatantly like filler, like, again, those old school mm-hmm. kind of quarterly, you know, Marvel Comics publishes sort of title that they would have back in the day.
Yeah, we get these with like a DC, you know, This is Gotham issue or something. You know, some of those that kind of hit these notes and, you know, every other annual's got this sense and sensibility to it, I think. And it works sometimes. And sometimes I'm just in the right mood and I'm like, I really feel good about that. It was really nice, and I really enjoyed it. And then sometimes I'm just not in the mood for it right at that time, and it just comes off as saccharine. And that's what this one was. It was a little too lightweight, a little too fluffy, and but not a bad comic, not a bad comic at all. But for me, it's a B-.
Understandable. Did you ever read any of the stuff with Battlestar in it?
I don't think so.
All right, so I think that's the other difference, is I came at it with a bit more knowledge and affinity for the two characters, whereas they were almost just random guys to you. I mean, D-Man, you've read in this volume.
Yeah.
So I can see where that would be a factor, too. But yeah, I can definitely see where if I had been in a less charitable frame of mind, or certainly if the art had been less to my liking, I probably would have been right there with you, possibly even a little lower of a grade. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
So our other book is Grand Passion number 1 from Dynamite. It's by James Robinson and Tom Feister. And I think this is a mini series, 5 issues or so. I'm hoping it is. I'm liking it enough I can go with a mini series. I'm not loving it so much that I'm willing to keep going necessarily beyond that. This is one where I felt this entire issue was set up for the story they plan on telling us, and it took about 15 of the 22 pages before we got to kind of the key moment that really kind of kicks the story off. And I get that we need a little time to kind of set the scene, get to know the two main characters and whatnot, but there was an aspect of this where I thought it started off really strong with Steve and Mabel and them as kind of the Bonnie and Clydes and stuff, the thieves or whatever. That worked out well for me. But then we cut to Mac, this deputy, in this small town. And it's like, we've jumped a year. Why did we jump a year? What's going on with this? I was thrown a little out of the story there. We then inexplicably on a page flip go back to Mabel, and I'm like, well, wait, what just happened? So the scene changes weren't working particularly well for me. And then when we do a scene after that, giving us some ostensibly some backstory on McNamara, I really didn't feel he had any backstory to speak of. The guy's dad and one of the councilmen here in this town were, they went to college together. That's all we know really about McNamara for the most part. And when the story actually hits the, it takes him a little bit longer with, McNamara and his partner and stuff before we actually get to the bank heist that really kicks things off. And then that one moment of love at first sight. And at this point, I'm already knocked out of the story a little bit, a little confused as to what they think they're telling us. Some of it was good, some of it after that, one or two places a little graphic, but yeah, fine, I get it. We've got to set the stakes and motivate the characters a little. It just felt like it took a little too long for everything to happen for the setup. I felt one of the two characters, Mabel, was set up very quickly and effectively, and Mac got a lot more time and wasn't set up particularly well. He's an out-of-town cop. I was starting to wonder, is he like a plant of some sort? Maybe he's like, I don't know, an FBI guy going for these cross-state robbers or something. It's like, what's going on here? I was actually reading more into the story, trying to almost to help it out or something. And then the way it just kind of ended, it just didn't totally work for me. It's the, I've seen you once. I have fallen madly, completely in love, but I must kill you sort of vendetta. Sort of, it's like, it was a little mechanical in what it was, where it left off. It felt a little forced. I didn't feel that they had sold everything, but it wasn't bad either. It was just, this is something where I think they've got the gem of a brilliant idea here. Something that could potentially make for a really fun movie. Ergo kind of mini series length, but I also feel that a strong editor and another pass at the script could have helped this, and I don't think it had the right editor for this story.
Okay. I liked it a lot. Mabel, I thought, was a really great character coming right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Super strong, and you know, for her, I felt for her immediately. And I was like, oh, okay, this is who I'm rooting for. This is who I'm getting behind. How are we going to get this nerd that she's with out of the picture? And then we run into Mac and you know, he has this exchange with his boss who's, you know, he's a jerk. It's really setting him up as someone to root for too. And I thought that was really effective. And so now I've got my 1-2 punch. Now, how am I going to bring these guys together? And I thought the way that they were brought together was really well done. And of course, we kind of saw where it was headed. But these guys are accomplished criminals and he's a good cop. So, of course, they're going to clash. The love at first sight angle, I did not see coming.
Really?
No.
That was a key part of the pitch.
I don't read pitches.
Okay.
Or if I do, I forget them 3 months later when the comic comes out. You know, I guess I read the solicits before I order them, but then I forgot most of the details. So I thought that was great and like really a cool twist, and it's going to be fun to see how that plays out and how their love affair trumps the code of the what, you know, the criminal underground and what that code is and what she must do. That was great. I really like this Tom Feister art. I don't know if he's got a long track record, but his level of detail and the balance and the storytelling that he's got, it is really great. I really liked it. Couple of his cars, I think he drew what was supposed to be a Ford, but it was really a Jeep. And so he doesn't really know the difference between a Ford and a Jeep. That's okay. I'm going to give him a pass on that because it was a really good Jeep. He just happened to put a Ford emblem on it. But besides that, I thought the artistry was really great and exceptional. I loved the way this world sucked me in, and you know, I want to see exactly what happens next. She's obviously not leaving town like their normal MO. She's going to stick around and get her revenge. Or is she? And where this goes from there and how that plays into him and his career. It laid a lot of groundwork. There was a lot of stuff here in one issue. And I loved it. I hope it's an ongoing. I hope it's not a 5-issue miniseries. I'm really enjoying it.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. And I guess there are parts of it I totally agree with. There are parts that I just had a different experience. I was not sold on McNamara as lead character that I got a root for. And given how effectively they'd done it with Mabel, and maybe because of how quickly and effectively they'd done it with Mabel, I was expecting that same sort of really solid, here's why you're going to like this character kind of a thing shown to me in pretty short order, and it wasn't. I felt he was wooden and stiff and boring.
I felt that the interactions between him and the chief, him and his coworkers, except for the one guy that was kind of had his back a little bit, I thought that really went a long way in setting him up as the guy to root for. And you know, he's an outsider trying to be one of the guys, and you know, he's got an uphill battle to climb. That made me feel for him and root for him right from that point.
Interesting.
And there was a point where one of the bank robberies had happened, and they were on the bed with all the money laying around, and there was just these panels that were showing her eyes. They were like dead eyes. Is that the sense you got that she was just somewhere else, not there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
that's
what
I was getting too.
Got the same sort of aspect at times with Mac in the next scene talking to his boss.
You know, he's also dead.
The doors behind you, panel. Yes, sir. You know, kind of he's going through the motions, but not actively engaged necessarily. And again, story is just starting, so we'll get to know these characters more as the issues go on. I find it interesting that you commented on how much you like the backgrounds compared to the comic we were just talking about where you didn't like the backgrounds, because there are a number of panels here where there are no backgrounds. And I'm not saying inappropriately so. I think in most cases it's fine for that.
There are a number where there are detailed leaves, autumn leaves floating down with buildings in the background and four or five different makes and models of vehicles in the background. You're not going to see that very often in comics. It's next level, and it's next level detail that you're not. We didn't get out of the other two books today.
I think there are some panels where absolutely we get that level of detail and stuff, but there are also others where, one, there's no room for the background because of the dialogue or whatever. And then there are some where they're just there is no background.
I mean, they could have, with the aerial shot of them in bed on the pile of money, they could have cheated.
Many artists would have not done the level of detail and stuff like that there. Absolutely.
I mean, they could have just stopped with the bed. They didn't need to go with the bra on the floor and over there's a dresser with a little snub-nosed pistol sitting on it that's way off screen. You wouldn't have to do that. There's just some extra stuff and some extra care that's on the page, and it helps with the storytelling for me.
No, and I agree with that. And that's one of the things where I had some mixed feelings on this, because I do feel there are pages where having some of the stuff in the background really worked, particularly when he's talking to the other guy after having talked to his boss. And in that top panel, there's some guys in the background. And in the next panel, he's kind of like referencing those other guys. So I liked that. It was just one where I felt they could have sold me a little bit better on the first issue. Because as it is, I'm not against it. I'm not saying it's bad or anything of the sort. I like it enough to keep going with it probationally. And I was hoping I'd come out really kind of, oh, you've got to go pick this up. It's really good. And I guess from my perspective, and clearly you've got a different view on this, McNamara's backstory was so thin that, I mean, really, he's a cop. And I got as much of that more or less from the solicit, where it says, Doc is a cop. It's Doc. His backstory was so thin, his name wasn't even solidified by the solicit. He was referred to as Doc there versus Mac. And I'm not sure why they changed it. Just reading the solicit, I would have changed it. Doc's a cop. Wait, is he a doctor or is he a cop? Oh, he's not a doctor. Why are you calling him Doc? Well, let's go with Mac. Okay, that works. And that to me is the sort of thing that is indicative of, an editor could have raised the quality of this some. I think it's well above kind of the acceptable average level or whatever. I thought it was good, but I was really hoping to come out of this just wowed. But I think part of it is they needed this issue to set the scene, and I think the story they want to tell really starts next issue. This is just what they had to tell us to get to that point. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, but because I don't think if they had started later than this, that the story could have worked. I think you have to have a little bit of ramp up time. It's just unfortunate that in a comic book series that eats up your first issue, whereas in the movie, you could do those 10, 15, 20 minutes or whatever, sometimes even before you hit the opening credits, and people are still sitting through the rest of the movie. So you know what I mean? It's more a problem with the size of the installment than what was in the installment, if you know what I mean.
And there was a sequence, you know, maybe like 14, maybe like a 16 panel grid or something that showcased some of the different costumes that they had worn in different bank robberies. Mm-hmm. And they had kind of set that up the page before, and they probably could have got away with just, you know, a couple, and we would have got the gist. But to have the, you know, the 16 panels just kind of show you all the, you know, he just kind of stretched his legs from an artistic standpoint. And I thought that was really cool and really showed the creativity of the crime, the criminals, and, you know, then the talent of the artist as well. And really got a sense that these guys are not going to make silly mistakes. They've planned this out. They have backup plans. They've got getaway procedures, and which kind of was the one hole I felt was like, these guys are so sophisticated in their bank robberies that I'm surprised he got in a shootout the way he did and got shot so easily. Mm-hmm. That was the one hole that I felt didn't really ring true. And, but I mean, I think that to get this story moving, we've got to get that guy out of the way.
Oh, absolutely. And he has to die violently.
He has to get out of the way and he has to die this way. But I don't know, you know, she would not have gotten shot. She might be the smarter. I think she's definitely the smarter of the two and probably responsible for most of the planning and the backup plans. And he is more of the hothead.
Absolutely.
That was how I was able to get my mind around the fact that he was so easily dispatched by what was, a cop that was kind of new to the force and wasn't really that accomplished himself.
Well, that was, again, the bit at the end. That was some of the mechanicalness I was talking about. They needed certain things to happen, and they happened. But when you go back to that 16-panel grid, and that wasn't even the full page. There's two more panels below it where they're setting up, here's their backstory. I thought that was fabulous. Flip to the next two pages, which is two-page spread, and we've got at least as many panels setting this guy up. But, like, six of them are the railroad crossing sign going from the red on the one side of the two lights to the other side, back, 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 back. Oh, because time is elapsing. And that's the sort of thing that's really tough to pull off in a comic book. I mean, they did it effectively, if kind of boringly, but it's something that is very cinematic. I can definitely see that shot in a movie. But then we get to the next row of stuff, and we've got, you know, five half panels or whatever of him, you know, where his mind is wandering and stuff like that. And it's like, you've just done some really compressed storytelling, and now you're kind of decompressing the storytelling here. That may have been one of the things that made me just not warm up to McNamara as much. I don't think it's a bad story. It's one that's got a lot of potential. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. And I think if I had been reading this in a trade paperback with the full story, I'd have just kept going at this point and never really analyzed this part of the story in isolation. But because we're getting it serialized, I kind of have to do that because that's all we've got so far. And I don't think that benefits this story or even this kind of story where you need to set some serious back matter for us to have before we can really get into the meat of the story they want to tell. I mean, that's just nature of the beast here. For me, I'm going with a B-. I'm going to give this another few issues to see where it goes. I think there's a definite possibility and probability it'll pick up for me. But it's something that, while I like it enough to keep going with it, I really can't recommend it that strongly to somebody right now. But again, that could easily change with the next issue.
Yeah, this was a sample for me and yet another problematic where I sample the issue and then that now it's on my pull list. So this, for me, works so well as a first issue, gave me some characters to root for, set the stage of the plot to propel it into the next issue so much so that, you know, I really, really care what happens and I want to find out what's next. Like I said, I think the art is next level. Really great storytelling going on here. And I gave it an A-, and was pretty close to the A. Something I would heartily recommend to anyone to check out and sample, because I think it's really good stuff, especially from Dynamite, which I have not had a lot of great success with. So I was really impressed with that.
All right. I'm glad it worked better for you. And I'm curious how it goes kind of moving forward. So I am still behind on my reading. I've read a couple of things, but we're recording a day early, and I've spent as we're recording this on a Monday versus the usual Tuesday, and I spent yesterday doing the trades episode with TJ. Tomorrow night I'm doing the number crunching with Sam, so I've had a few other things kind of on my plate prepping for those. So I haven't done as much reading as I'd like, but I did finally finish off the week of the 19th, because I had just held off on the Star Trek Boldly Go issue, and I finally watched Star Trek Beyond over the weekend. That was one of the other things I did, by the way. We'll have an episode on that coming up as soon as I can get that edited.
The week of October 19th?
No, November 19th.
The week of the 9th.
No, you're right, October 19th. You're right. The one I had one left on last week. I read the one.
Oh, okay. So you're on the 26th then?
Yeah. Okay. And it's just having as much time to get some reading done, have had some other stuff going on.
Almost done with the 26th? Are you firmly in it, or?
I am firmly in it. I'm over halfway, but some of these have just been some big weeks. Like I said, I didn't have a chance to kind of update my metrics as to where I'm at, but if I pull up the non-updated spreadsheet, I'd gotten halfway through it, and about a third of the way through the week after it, I have not touched this week other than the couple of books we've read, I think. So I've got plenty to read.
I'm trying to think what came out on the 26th that stood out for me, that you might be reading. You're not reading Chew.
No. Nope.
It's winding down. Mycroft still? You still enjoying that?
I'm liking it. I'm not thinking it's like the best thing on the planet or something, but it's good.
Vigilante Southland. Does that do anything for you?
I have not read the first issue of that yet.
Okay. That's one of the ones.
That's one of the ones.
Now, Tarzan and the Planet of the Apes, Dark Horse book. I'm surprised that I'm enjoying that.
Read the first, liked it, have not read the second. I've been going kind of alphabetically on some of these for lack of any better order. So the stuff at the beginning of the alphabet, I'm more likely to have read than the stuff at the end. Hey, I got to pick some methodology.
I guess that'll work. Yeah. Yeah, that works.
I wind up sorting my stack when I go through the packing list, so unless there's something saying, no, I should read this other thing in first, and you know, I cherry pick, you know, so I've read a few things that are further down, but all other things being equal, there comes a point where it's just give me the next one in the stack.
Now, did you grab that Walking Dead 160 from the week of the following week? Would have been the... That'd have been like the 2nd of the November?
Yes, I believe so. That was the really Whisperer War?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. It was good to see Moon Knight write the ship too, because I thought it was getting kind of wonky, and 8 was a little better than 7.
That's good to hear. I haven't read 8 yet. Again, I've still got a lot of the 2nd and even more of the 9th.
I keep thinking that, you know, I've got this nice long weekend coming up. I'm hoping that I'll be able to get caught up, but I bet something else will jump in the place and I'll still be behind.
You know, I'm thinking that too, but I haven't watched Luke Cage. I've got a couple of movies I want to watch. I don't know what kind of family time commitments I've got this weekend.
Yeah.
So it's easy to go in thinking, oh man, I've got Thanksgiving weekend. I can just knock all of this out, and I won't.
Yeah. Now, but when this will go up on the 28th, so that means previews will come out on the 30th.
Yes.
And so that get those clips in, and I think some of the online solicits are already posted to the forum, but not all.
I think they are. A lot of them are up there again. I appreciate Rollinator and
Jason.
Jason, thank you. I'm blanking on the name. It's been a long day. Jason from Hawaii from posting all that stuff. That's one less thing for me to do. And there are certain weeks where that's greatly appreciated. Most weeks, it's always appreciated, but somewhere it's like, I just wouldn't have had time to do it. And this is one of those so far. We should be getting, the online solicits come out around the middle of the month. Then they do the advance kind of digital, you know, here's what's in the order form type stuff. And then finally that last week we get, the previews, and this being a 5-week month, it takes a little longer than it would have in a 4-week.
And we've finalized our categories for the year in comic spotlight that will be going up. It will already be up by the time you listen to this, or something went horribly, horribly wrong on my end. And so we look forward to hearing all the listener favorites posted, so that we can compare and contrast with ours. We'll give you a month to get all those up, and then we'll do our picks sometime in early January. That's always a fun issue or fun episode to do.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. I always have a hard time kind of figuring out my picks and stuff, just because again I read so much, a lot of it kind of blurs together. There's one
some
title-
surprises on there this year that. I wouldn't, if you would have told me that they were going to be on there, I would have laughed at you and said, no way. So I've surprised at some of my favorites and my choices.
Yeah, I would say there are a couple of things that if you had told me last year, this is the sort of thing that'll be on potentially on there. I would have said, really? I wouldn't have seen that coming.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I love that. Again, that's one of the fun things, about those episodes. Like last year, and I've mentioned it before, I'll mention it again, you know, when people are saying, oh yeah, I thought this was the best of the year or whatever. And I'm like, really? That? I haven't checked that out. Maybe I should. You know, in other cases, it's like I have, and maybe my taste just lie in a different direction or something. But it's fun when people get a chance to kind of spotlight the things over the course of the year that just really stood out for them as kind of that head and shoulders above the rest, or even if it's just neck and neck sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, those are the two quandaries of picking something. Sometimes it's like, geez, it all blurs together, or there are three things that are way above everything else, but which of the three?
And it's also very telling of reading habits too, because there are some folks have ties and they can't choose in some publisher categories, and then they can't even fill out all the blanks in the other because you know that it's just very compartmentalized how some folks read, and it's really interesting to see how different folks have different favorite publishers and different favorite comics, and it's just a cool exercise, a lot of fun.
Yeah. And sometimes people are just all over the board. Other times it's like, yep, they've got this one creative team they are loving. And yeah. It's like, I envy the creators that have that kind of uber fan.
Yeah, I think it was the fade out a couple years ago that got like one listener's favorite everything, the best colorist, the best artist and writer and title and limited series. It really cleaned up.
You know, that's the sort of thing where I'd love to know in cases like that, and really for everybody, roughly how many things do you read? How wide of a net has your reading cast to fill in some of these things? Because it'd be one thing for somebody to say that because that's all they read. It's another thing for somebody to say that because they're reading a ton of stuff, but that's where they think everything is just really at the cream of the crop, totally gelled together and just excellent.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's nothing wrong with either. I mean, hey, if you've got three titles you're getting and you're loving them and that's enough for you, hey, more power to you. That's cool. So yeah, we've got previews deadline morning of December 10th. That's a week and a half or so after that previews comes out. We got the previews teleconference the following Saturday, December 17th, 7 p.m. Central Time. Again, we've got the best of the year stuff for people to be picking. Trying to think if there's anything else to be mentioning. Hopefully everybody has here in the States have had a good Thanksgiving holiday. For those elsewhere, I hope you've enjoyed us having a good Thanksgiving holiday.
Hope you didn't talk about politics around the Thanksgiving table.
Yeah, hopefully everybody survives any major family get-togethers they have. That's always a challenging thing.
It could be a challenge this year.
So if there's nothing else, I think that does it.
Yep.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Vigilante Southland number 2 from DC, Ultimates 2 number 1 from Marvel, and Masked number 1 from Titan Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.